the table. Now, all right, let's start at 23. Atocho nein adam das, omar avami gidola deo shenitno bitchilas brocha shel chol. You must understand this concept of deo, of knowledge, of wisdom, of insight, because it's the first brocha of chol during the weekday. Not Shabbos, not Yom Tov. Not Shabbos when you're restricted in melacha. Not Yom Tov when you're guided by simcha. Chol, what guides you? Your day-to-day necessities. The realities of making it and striving and growing and gobbling up and consuming everything and everyone around you. Wisdom. He says, Geder ha-deya hu lihishtamesh b'chol davar. You want to know what deya is, what true wisdom is to be able to use everything. Gam hashafel shebetashmishim, even the lowest of the lowest things. Okay? To know how to properly use a paper clip is wisdom. It isn't even worth a penny. Litachlis hama'ale. To be able to go ahead and use that paper clip so that you can grow as a result of it. That you are on a higher madrega than you were before you had the paper clip.
Is that of the person or the object?
No, the person. Sapin kedusha. When you go ahead and you are actively cognizant of the fact that you are on the ladder, ma'alot, an escalator going up, and this is kedusha. So then even though you don't have such a big storehouse of wisdom, is nakel hu she'yaseh dvarim l'tachlit hashleimus. Ultimately, if you're on the elevator, you'll go, no matter what, even though it's not so, you're not such a person who understands. But if you're on an upward direction and in an upward projectile, you'll get there. However, avol k'sho'seik b'inyanechol, when you go ahead, and you have to get out into the marketplace, which is all chol, which is all weekday, which is factory, which is office, which is the brutal marketplace, is sarich dea haguna. You need a tremendous amount of wisdom, l'sha'abdein l'tachlis ha'mu'leh, to be able to take and understand that whatever you are doing has got to be harnessed for this upward surge to kedusha, kedas chacham haroe es hanolad, just like ezahu chacham, who is the wise one haroe es hanolad, who's able to see the consequences of what you do. Val zenemar, and this is the same way of saying bechol derachecho da'ehu, whatever you do, you've got to know the Ribono Shel Olam. Okay, so again, I place myself in juxtaposition to you people. I sit surrounded by Sfarim, surrounded all day by Torah, surrounded all day by Jewish souls, surrounded all day by Jewish mind, you see? And there's very little opportunity for me to think chol. Very little. You guys are walking the streets, you're doing your business, you come into contact with that broader world, and you're still davening, and you're still keeping kosher, and you're still making it for Shabbos, and a thousand other things that you do. This is probably more critical than the extra 15 minutes that you theoretically want. When you leave shul and the way you conduct yourself, that is the litmus test of the moments that you spent in shul.
I have a complaint.
It's compelling, sir.
I have a complaining question to ask with that. Why is it then that it's always so difficult to get people to teach like kosher mishpat? You get a million people who will teach you, who will teach you halachas of Shabbos.
When you're
ask someone to teach, a guy who's sat in yeshiva learning all the babas, yeah. Right.
When you're ready,
teach you kosher mishpat,
when you're ready, let me know.
I can't teach you.
When you're ready, let me know.
Yeah.
Sure. No, forget ethics of business. Being Odom Lachavero. Whether it is Choshem Mishpat Ishkenim. Excuse me, Choshem Mishpat Ishkenim. You are 19 and I'm 23 Idaho Street. There are halachos, midoraisa and midorabanan, about the fact that we are bar metzra, that our two properties are but. Simple as that.
Let's have a share.
Good idea. Good idea. The biggest injustice that this generation has suffered is that the Chofetz Chaim didn't get around to write a Mishnah Berurah on Choshen Mishpat.
The whole thing saying that how you have to learn certain parts of Choshen Mishpat before you go into business.
Wait, didn't the Aruch HaShulchan do that?
I'm talking about Chofetz Chaim in the sense of not dealing with the issues, but the Mishnah Berurah style of taking word by word, phrase by phrase, halacha by halacha, and anthologizing everything that there is to know. You see.
Didn't this have to do that? This whole thing has to do with the cook's whole hashkafat olam, that everything has kedushin. You have to take out the kedushin from everything. So it's just,
it's as simple as that.
The whole thing.
Simple as that. Transference of the kedusha energy, and this is a very mystical kind of a concept. This, it's not Rav Kook, it's the Zohar, you understand. It goes back to Kabbalah. There is nothing in this world that doesn't have kedusha generated. Now, needless to say, there is different, just like various foods in front of us have different caloric values, okay? So too, there is different kedusha in its caloric form. A pair of tefillin has certain kedusha generated that a Pepsi Cola, it may be life and it may be zest and it may be light and lively, but it doesn't have the same kedusha, the same zing that a pair of tefillin will. It's as simple as that, but it still has. So maybe I am the last person in the world, Bruce, to discourage or to say anything that would get a person to spend less time in shul. But maybe you've got to start viewing yourself in the total context of your day. In other words, not just your davening, but what you would be without that davening the minute you left shul. Or what kind of a personality you would be if you weren't a davening personality. I can't talk about you. I can tell you that I would be hell on earth to live with. Absolute hell on earth.
Well, that's why I don't go to shul and daven.
No, I didn't ask again. I don't feel that you're on the carpet. Yeah. I'm talking about myself.
Well, that even justifies even more the for proper atmosphere and for proper time, etc., etc. I think
for
one complements each other.
It also has a very devastating implication, at least what we just learned now, for Shabbos. If you look again at line 23-24, the original statement in Gemara Brachos by Rabbi Ami was Gedola Dea Shenitla B'tchilas Brachos Shachol, that the Shemona Esrei of the weekdays has got to ask for these feelings, not Shabbos. As a matter of fact, on Shabbos you're not allowed to ask for this, because if Shabbos was spent properly,
you don't need it.
Not that you don't need it. It is antithetical. Okay? How many times our dibur, the way we talk and where our mind is. Rabbi Soloveitchik made the most powerful statement to someone who wasn't a Shomer Shabbos. He asked him why. He says, "My God, I'm going bankrupt." And he said, "I don't understand you. You'll go bankrupt the same way in 5 days as you will in 6 days of work." Okay, as simple as that. If that's the case, become a Shomer Shabbos. If the end result is going to be the same, but Shabbos needs such a retraining on our parts to be able to be that something other, that the world is totally comes to an end. The world of the last week and the world of next week comes to a total and definitive end. There is nothing there. Absolutely nothing there. There are people at the Vilna Gaon's inspiration who learned all Friday night, not Thursday night, all Friday night, because they couldn't see on Shabbos sleeping their way through. Simple as that. They took a nap, a little rest, but they learned all Friday night. And that's separate from Mishmar night in the Litvish Yeshivas, which was Thursday night, when in preparation for Erev Shabbos, they went ahead and they learned or whatever. And this is, it needs total reorientation. If you accept this in Chol, Bruce, then Shabbos becomes totally different. Let's finish off there on line 28. Behold, Rachecha Da'ehu Rab, you are shaking your head. She'omar bar kapra, or bar kapora as you prefer, that this behold rachecha do'ehu, this ability to understand the godliness in every single item that we do, is shehi palsha ketana. This is a three word challenge, shekol gufei Torah teluyim ba, that the entire basis of Torah is built upon. It's as simple as that. You know, so you guys who feel inadequate, again, I have no real need or desire to put myself down.
This is a theoretical to many Rosh Yeshiva that say that you should spend all your time in Yeshiva.
No.
Not go out into the world.
It's not antithetical. It really isn't. Because this machlokas exists in Gemara, back in the Mishnah's time, it's brought in Soto and elsewhere. Hold on, listen to me. I hear what you're saying, and the chap is a good one. I hear what you're saying. You will remember that Ben Azai, in the discussion in the Gemara, that Shmone Esrei Lechupa, okay, by 18, it's time already. You surely have matured. You've studied. You have a parnasa, you've built a house, get yourself a wife. It's time to settle down. Ben Azai said, what shall I do? Nafshi choshka b'Torah. I'm married to my Torah. I'm married to it. What can I do? If you're totally involved and you're married to your Torah, then you have reached a level of Kedusha, and that is, in and of itself, behold rachecha da'ehu. Simple. That you have sacrificed all kinds of other things for the adulation and the admiration that will be given to you for Torah, it's an exception to the rule. So it's not necessarily antithetical. Chazal in Mishnah times already realized that there could be certain exceptional cases. Ben Azai was one of them. However, the way of the world is to become a shoemaker, to become a doctor, to become a lawyer, to become a carpenter, to become a builder, to become a computer expert, to become a salesman, to become a this, to become a that. Okay? And the behold rachecha da'ehu is the norm. So it's not antithetical. And if you take a look at it, how many Jews are there? Or let's do it this way. How many frum Jews are there? And how many are spending their time in yeshiva? It is the exception to the rule. 1%, 2%, 3%. But 97% are charged with the behold rachecha da'ehu. So it isn't antithetical. If you tell me that the odds are 60-40, 70-30, then I have an antithesis. I don't have an antithesis. But after all is said and done, if you don't have that so-called exception to the rule, that nuclear generator of Torah, Yomam V'Laila, for years, for decades in some cases, then, you know, if it's not boiling hot over there, it won't be warm by us. It's as simple as that. We need that source of warmth and radiance to be able to keep us on this path of Behold Rachecha Da'ehu. So to bring it back to tefillah, the purpose of your tefillah in rising above yourself, whatever that means, and I don't know that you understand it fully yet, I don't know that I understand it fully yet, is that when you come down to earth, that you are a different person.
After
when you leave, you are a different person. And the Zohar speaks about this very interestingly. We build modules of tefillah. We have brachos and karbonos as the lowest module, the first. Then a little higher realm is psukei dezimra. Then shema is still a higher realm. The highest realm is tefillah, right? Do you stay up there? No. What do you do after tefillah, after davening, shemona esrei? Back. Tachnun. Back to the reality that you're down here. But when you've come down, you haven't toppled down. You're different. You're different. So that if it's a slach lono avinu ki chatonu, mechal lono malkenu ki fashonu, that's the way I dealt yesterday. Today is a new day. I'm going to do it differently. I'm not a hypocrite. I'm not a phony. I've grown. I'm imperfect. There's no such thing as a perfect human being. But today, I'm going to give it a shot. And if I miss today, then tonight, I'm going to try again tomorrow.
It's like Shat Nolein L'Shabeach. That's at the very end of davening. That's when you're then going to Nolein L'Shabeach should be at the beginning of davening. They explain that at the end of davening is when you then are going to begin to be M'Shabeach Hashem. We're going into the world.
It's nice. It's nice. Sounds Chassidish, but I don't care what it, yeah, all right. Okay, but it's nice. Shevach! You see, let me... Listen, Shevach, Bruce, should come before anything else. Because the Shemoneh Esrei, as we will see, has three modules to it. The first module, before you start to ask for anything, and before you start to thank, is Shevach. An acknowledgement of praise. Okay? That should come first. So Aleinu L'Shabeach should be put before Kabbonis, before Adon Olam.
Yeah,
you see?
Sure.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying,
yeah. Hello?
Yeah.
You're starting your journey in the world. Your quest to be able to take the whole of the daytime necessities and transmute it and elevate it into Kedusha. So you start with Shevach. That's the beginning of your day, Oleinu L'Shabeach.
It's a real critique to our society. It seems to the from and the shul and yeshiva, then to go into business or on vacation. Yeah, look at them. They think it's only in one area, not the other area.
I want to tell you clearly. I have very simple tastes. The only thing I will leave to my children in terms of physical matters are my svarim, Kedusha, and a pair of tefillin. To each one of them I have four pairs of tefillin. And a talis. I have one extra talis, but, you know, in case I get cold, I should be able to wrap me in it. After that, my clothes won't fit. They're all torn anyway and tattered. And I only have, interestingly enough, three watches. The most expensive cost me $48. That's the most expensive. Nothing else. But the knowledge that their door is going to build a greater association of Orthodox Jewish scientists, okay? An association of Orthodox Jewish lawyers, Kolpa, is probably one of the biggest rays of hope that I have. That my Daniel will be able to take the biochemistry and blend it with the learning better than I know my science. And Shmuel will one day decide to be a lawyer, and his learning will be better than mine, you see. And that Hillel will be able to go with his tzitzis out and build a house that'll be better than me with my beard and my yarmulke and black hat. This is the issue.
That's the whole point. But how many people are like that?
I don't know, but
because they can't.
Better in what sense?
I can't. What?
Better in what sense? What do you mean better?
That they've taken more. I've retreated to the ivy halls of the yeshiva and the shul all of my life. Okay? They have chosen all to go out into the world of chol,
yeah,
and be able to be mekadesh that chol.
Yeah, but I mean, it all, not to be over flattering, but what you have done, the outreach you've had, and the success you've had.
Listen to me. Give me a second, Yaakov. Keep quiet for a minute. Listen to me carefully. There is. You've heard of Freud. Okay, you've heard of Jung. The third one of the big three was this Adler. There is a network of it's an international network of training institutes in Adlerian psychology, which today has become acknowledged to be even more important than Freudian psychology. That's what's happening. Adler has a son and a daughter. Adler died in 37. And he has a son and a daughter, both MD psychiatrists who followed in their father's way, who are offering to a very select few who can qualify some seminars. They are both very old people, and you don't know how much longer they're going to be. And I made a decision that I just have to get in to listen to them, because who knows what tomorrow is going to bring. So I sit in classes there with psychiatrists and PhDs in psychology and the like. And one fellow, very charming fellow, says to me, I'm sitting there with my yarmulke and my beard, says to me, "You look like a rabbi." I says, "I'm sure I'm happy you told me that." Because I really was going to do something terrible tonight. But if you're telling me that I look that way, my hands are tied. And I sure as hell was going to get into trouble, but now I just don't have the guts. Now, sitting next to me is a PhD professor in Baruch College, with whom Leah went to high school and Stern College with 30 years ago, who happens to be a Rebbetzin at the same time, the wife of another young Israel rabbi, and she looks at me and says, "What are you, crazy?" But the fact of the matter is, okay, that it's so much harder for me to get into trouble than you guys. I look like a rabbi to this clump of goy, this nothing, who doesn't even know me. So what am I going to do? I mean, I try to get rid of that black uniform, and I walk in brown hats, light brown hats, or fancy gray things, and they look at me, and I walk on the street, and they say, "Hello, rabbi." What can I do? I carry it around with me. Now, it may be my nose. I don't know, but I can't get into the trouble. I don't necessarily have the nisyonos that you would have, you see. Probably if you walked into a McDonald's for whatever you want, to make a telephone call, no one is going to look at you and say, "What the heck are you doing here?" I walk into a McDonald's at 3 o'clock in the morning in Newark, and someone looks me straight in the face and says, "Vos tus tada? What are you doing here?" It's as simple as that. So I'm not here to flatter you that's never been the case. But given given this definition, as I read between the lines, the task of going out into the marketplace and creating an orthodox presence, whether you do wear a yarmulke or you don't wear a yarmulke, which is not essential, but people know that you are frum, and they have to work around it and with you, is Kiddushas Hashem of V'nikdashti, the likes of which I don't know that I have accomplished. And I'm not demeaning anything that I did. I really am not demeaning. But I don't know if I really could have existed in my lifetime.
as a, you know, as the doctor that I should have been, as the psychiatrist for which I was offered a full scholarship to medical school 13 years ago. I don't know. Again? Maybe yes, maybe no.
No more, no less than anything?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. But I place an immense proportion of importance on the fact that you guys are out there in that secular world. And I do it because of this and what Rav Kook writes in a half a dozen other places of the dialectic between the Kodesh and the Chol, the ability to be able to carry yourself with a sense of Kodesh, the Kedushas Yisrael and the Kedushas HaTorah, and you affect a kind of or, and this goes back to the very beginning, the concept of or, that if you are acting properly, there is a certain enlightenment that you bring to your immediate surroundings. Bell Telephone, Bell Labs, has a chassidish guy sitting there with a department in fiber optics who just goes ahead and does whatever he wants. He sits there with a bekesha and he hires all kinds of yeshiva guys, and Bell Lab knows if you want results. Let them go be the Jews that they are. You won't come in on these days. And you leave early on Friday. Do you have any hasoga what the anti-Semitism that is dissipated in a Bell Labs as a result of this? I mean, it's mind-boggling. A Chassidish Rebbe, the guy's name is Tversky, picks up and in a Catholic hospital goes and becomes chairman of the Department of Psychiatry in Pittsburgh. It's mind-boggling. Maya Kahana's buddy, with whom he split many years ago, Joe Cherba. Joe Cherba is a YU guy. He doesn't talk about it. He's a Musmich of YU. When I was there, he was getting smicha when I first came in. To be able to sit and be foreign policy advisor to presidents and to State Department, don't talk about it. It's mind-boggling. All this as a result of the daily infusion, the so-called chemotherapy that you have from tefillah three times a day. Because you lose yourself into that higher being. First into Kedushas Yisrael, that it is the group that is more important than anything else. And parenthetically, that's why all of the tefillahs are what? Are Slach Lonu, Refa'enu, Barech Oleinu Hashem Elokeinu Es Hashanah Zos. Right? It's in the plural, not in the singular. I know you have singular needs, and you're entitled to have them fulfilled. But this is the losing of yourself, and then even into the higher cause. Asei Ritzon Cho, Ki Ritzon Lo. That you go ahead and you dovetail with whatever is needed over there. Now, in no way can you people be satisfied, at this point at least, with, hey, but what about all the things I want? I'm a good guy. I've been doing all these mitzvahs. I want to see some results. You see. Well, that maybe that we have to continue. Let's just do two or three more lines.
This would fit in why he would see the building of Israel so strongly. It's almost like a form of tefillin being able to be.
What's there to talk about? What's there to talk about? He will say. Oh.
If you're a chalutz, what else are you doing except not only talking about applying laws. Agricultural laws and things to a society, and also building a society. But just to try to build them, try to build a political life on a Torah basis. Answer questions that people didn't answer for 5,000 years.
I will show it to you in the Siddur. Okay. Let me sharpen it for you. When you daven, where must you face? How's that possible when Melo Chol Ha'aretz Kevodo, right? How's it possible? The Shekhinah rests right over here in this Doro. Elama, it is the sign that you have to lose yourself as an individual within the context of the totality of Klal Yisrael, represented on the map by Eretz Yisrael. And it's not necessarily Mizrach. It could be Dorom, it could be Tzofa, it depends where you are. Right? And when you stand in Yerushalayim, it has to be towards the Beis HaMikdash, because that's, so to speak, the ladder upwards. Ein zeh ki im Beis Elokim v'zeh shar ha-shamayim. Okay?
People who are in, who are east of Yerushalayim, what?
Answer it. That's it. And when you're,
where's the dividing line? At certain places, you could know. I'm saying, how far east do you go? Because like
you face the Beis Hamikdash. That's all.
No, I'm saying, like, say you were in.
You're on
Hawaii.
The international line.
Okay.
Equal distance, let's say, between Yerushalayim and the other half.
I hear what you're saying. Okay, so you would probably go eastward. Okay? You'd probably go eastward as the map would be. Alright? But remember, it's not east.
No, it's
the center of our existence, and that is Eretz Yisrael. And if in Eretz Yisrael, the center of its existence, which is Yerushalayim. And if in Yerushalayim, the center of its existence, which is the Har HaBayis. Okay? And it could be northwest, east, or south. All right. Although we will continue. I just want to show you one small thing when it comes to Rafa'enu. Line 34. Omar Rabba Bar Chinina Sava Mishmei de Rav, in the name of Rav, Rabba Bar Chinina Sava said, if you have the ability to beg for rachamim for your friend, and you don't, in other words, not that you don't want to, but you just didn't. I mean, because you had to go to do something. You know, you had to go play baseball Sunday at 10 o'clock or whatever. Is nikra chote, then for sure you are a sinner. Shenemar. And he quotes the pasuk, God forbid that I should lose the opportunity to beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu on your behalf. Just 3.5 lines for now. And we'll come back to it. Mishor Shei HaEmuna. A root of all of our faith. V'yisodei HaChokhmah Elokit. And a basis of understanding divine wisdom is huladas, is for us to understand shekol davar shebaolam, everything in this world shemimenu totzaos legarol chayav, that can affect the destiny of our life, whether it is musari, whether it is ethical, spiritual, o chomri, or physical, shel ha'adam, and it impacts upon man, eino naase b'mikre, there is no coincidence. Ki kol ha-mikrim kulam, every incident, bi-izdamnut pigishatam, at the right point in time, mechavnim heim le-tachlisam, have an ultimate purpose in a tachlis. Okay? Now, we'll pick up over here in Yitz Hashem next time, but if it is in the stars, so to speak, that someone gets sick, as a result of which you're off the wall, because it's your flesh and blood, then the tachlis of that was to get you to do, to think, or to act in whichever way you did, whether it is the giving of tzedakah, whether it was the davening, whether it was your self-imposed neder that from here on in you're not doing X, or you're going to start to do Y. That was its purpose, you see. And if the patient ultimately recuperates, that's what was intended. If the patient doesn't recuperate, it isn't that it was accidental or medical science just didn't know. That was the divine intention. And you have to take up the challenge from there. So that if we can just readdress ourselves to where we left off last time, the Mishaberach should have always results. The challenge that we have is to understand what result was intended by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Can we change his mind? Do we change his mind? Under what circumstances do we change his mind? You see? That has to be investigated. We'll continue to investigate. Does prayer, does tefillah at any time go ahead and change the mind of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And we'll pick up and we'll fill in here and we'll add whatever your point also as far as Eretz Yisrael and continue on in trying to gain the tidbits of information to see a unified position that Rav Kook takes on tefillah.